Welcome, folks, friends, and dear listeners, wherever you're at. This is Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik from Sweden, and our website is redicecreations.com and rediceradio.net. Well, today we have Jay Dyer from Jay's Analysis back with us on the program to talk about the false flag in Paris and the big picture of how this is going to be used. We have an extended segment ahead of us, and we'll cover a lot of ground in the process too, so I hope you listen up and enjoy. Hey, Jay, welcome back. Good speaking with you again. Thank you for coming on with us.
Oh, thank you, Henry.
Absolutely. So the Paris attacks, there are a few different components here to this story that we should talk about. Not only, of course, who and how it was done, but also why. We are, of course, seeing those who are seeking to benefit from this situation on top of it, you know, letting no disaster go to waste, as Rahm Emanuel, you know, said. But there's really, I think, three or actually four different type of four different events that ties into this one event, as I see it anyway. One, we have the shooting of the people at the Charlie Hebdo, the paper, the offices there. Two, we have the shooting of the police officer. I believe that's out somewhere outside of the offices. Then we have three is the attack and the hostage thing at that kosher market. And I'd say finally four, we have the shooting of the two brothers, at least that we're told, did the attacks at that warehouse way outside of Paris. And I think, I don't know how many of these you have looked at, Jay, how many of you have time to look at yet separately. I've only looked at a couple of these so far, and it's actually quite a bit of material to analyze and go over here. But have you kind of tied in all of these four? How do you view the situation, Jay?
I stayed up, I think, most of the week reading news, so
yep.
I tried to process as much of this avalanche of data as I could as it was coming in, you know, from different sources. So yes, although personally I only had time really to focus on the initial event at the magazine and then the background of particularly Amedi Coulibaly or however you pronounce it, in the situation with him, because certain things immediately stuck out in regard to his background. But I think you're absolutely right. There's a huge, this is a big event. There's no question about that, whatever your view of it is. But my surprise is in terms of somewhat of the opposition that I've received already just from making a sort of initial assessment analysis that I think we already see the signs of a false flag present. Before we get into that, I'd like to say that that does not mean certain other things. So in other words, if I say something like that, it does not mean that all the individuals involved in these events are therefore the good guys. It does not mean that I think that Islam is therefore correct or good. It also does not mean
right.
that every single aspect of the event is necessarily staged. So it doesn't necessarily mean any of those things. It just simply means, in my view, that the details that we've been given, according to mainstream media and other officials and analysts in other countries and so forth, does not makes sense. It does not match up. Significant details do not corroborate with other details. It looks to have all of the signs, in my view, of past events that we can clearly identify as a false flag event or black operation, such as Operation Gladio. And at the same time, we're looking at ISIS / Al-Qaeda terror cells, and I think almost everybody in alternative media has to know by now, within the last 2 years, that the West has funded ISIS and Al Qaeda.
They sure have, yeah.
It's I've even gone into citing back 2-3 years ago the CFR report on why we need Al Qaeda in Syria. So this is all very public, and I don't know how many foreign policy magazines we need to cite to understand that. But nevertheless, I've gotten some backlash, particularly from libertarians, saying that it is just absolutely crazy to come out, this early in the game or in the analysis and present the thesis that it is a false flag. I'm not the only one doing that.
Oh, certainly not. It's right. The bandwagon is there,
Well, and I mean, respectable thinkers and you know, longtime people who've been involved in government. Paul Craig Roberts has come out and more or less said that he thinks it leans in that direction. He hints at that. So, you know, it's not like this is crazy talk. I mean, there's definite patterns for these kinds of deep state events. And when we can see those, you know, I don't think it's a leap. I think there's sort of a knee jerk reaction amongst certain people in alternative media and certain libertarians to want to, you know, have some sort of street cred or reasonability with or rationality with mainstream commentators and mainstream thinkers. So they want to still have some sort of a common ground of appeal to not look too kooky. Right. And so, you know, again, we just have to look at the big picture. We have to look at, you know, back to Gladio. We look at, you know, elements of 9/11. I believe 9/11 was an inside job. So we see similar patterns there. We look at past shootings. We look at previous magazines and news publications, the Dutch cartoons and incidents like that, that resulted in the killing of the Van Gogh person from by the radical Islamic. Mm-hmm. In other words, we've seen this before.
Okay? Yeah, yeah.
The Benghazi event with the Mohammed. Now, you know, I don't want to go too much into listing all these yet because we can do that. But the main point here being, you know, it's not a leap. At this point, I think there all the patterns are there.
So how,
by the way, that also, I'm sorry, that also doesn't mean that I necessarily know who did it. You know, I don't know all
right.
the details
yeah.
of, you know, you can have a private security or some sort of a black op that's, you know, outsourced, Wetworks that's outsourced to some private group that could be anybody. So, you know, it could be foreign mercenaries, who knows, but now who, so, you know, who contracted it? I don't have any information on that. I'm not any sort of insider on anything like that. But when I look at the patterns of what events are public, the patterns match up to previous false flags.
Yeah, exactly. They sure do. And it's also this idea that let's tackle this first. I guess we have the situation of a very tight-knit you know, community of people that actually fund, as you said, they fund Al Qaeda. They made sure that a lot of, you know, arms and resources and what have you was funneled into Syria, for example, to help to, you know, topple Assad and these kinds of things. And he has evidently not spoken and said, you know, I'm willing to work with you. We need to try to, you know, combat ISIS. But, you know, you can't just go in and drop bombs on us here, you know, that kind of attitude. So there's that going on at the same time. But what about the plausibility that these actually are, let's say, genuine breakout groups? Because I saw that a lot of people, they make the coincidence, you know, kind of analogy and show, look at this, they, you know, some of the people that are allegedly have taken responsibility for this, they've been like, you know, dining with the CIA back in, you know, many, many years ago and stuff like that, right? But that does not necessarily mean, I mean, that's guilt by association, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that some of these individuals haven't been radicalized and now they actually have gone and said, nope, we're going to, you know, break ranks and we're going to do our own thing. That's still possible. But I think what's important to keep in mind is the bigger picture, right? Otherwise, we kind of, it becomes so detailed and there is so much information that we has to have to be able to confirm all these things. So it's very difficult to approach it. That's why I look at, I guess, both the big picture and then also at the small events of what happens on the street level by actually, you know, analyzing the few footage that's out there, the claims, etc. But it's really a difficult task, and I don't like this, you know, idea either that people they've decided as soon as it happens that yep, it's a false flag, and all I have to do is to prove it. You know,
sure. I mean, when I think of 9/11, you know, it's not like you have to have omniscient knowledge of every detail before you can present any kind of thesis. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that's how, you know, people who are, for example, skeptical of false flag events or inside job type scenarios, they often, you know, try to go through some impossible laundry list of expectations of you, you know, how you're supposed to know every single aspect. Well, that's just impossible. And I mean, no private investigator, analyst of any kind is able to have every single detail of some grand event before they come up with a thesis. It's just humanly impossible. So what you do is, obviously, you pick out the principal patterns and events that line up with other known events. And so when we look at the initial Charlie Hebdo shooting, it's entirely possible that there are legitimate cells. When we think of Gladio included usage of the Bader Meinhof, which was the Red Army faction, and that was a radical Marxist organization, and they were real terrorists. That was not, to my knowledge, fake news footage, right?
Right.
So, yeah. Now, I believe that I think there are aspects of the videos that are questionable. I don't have I don't have a definite position on that yet. I think there are questionable elements. So, but that doesn't mean that it could be that aspects of the video was staged. It could have been a drill where you had it go live. People could have been killed. And another part of the event at the kosher deli, could have been real. Right. So, I mean, you can have, it doesn't have to be an either or.
Exactly.
And like you said, determining in the larger picture, whether it's a false flag, doesn't depend on either of those specific, criteria. Right. So, I mean, if the West is funding Islam and arming jihadis and has been doing that for a long time, that already qualifies it as a false flag, even if the people are mentally ill, wind up dolls or whatever. I'm not saying MK Ultra, but I'm just saying, low IQ radicalized individuals that, are propagandized into carrying out some event, which is, we've seen this before in the U.S. New York Times had a major piece a couple years ago that discussed the FBI hatching bomb plots in a form of entrapment to kind of keep the terror story going, right? And if you don't produce results of stopping terrorists, you're not going to get the funding that you need.
Mm, yeah.
And again, this was big New York Times story. And again, two or three years ago, I forget the exact date, but so yeah, I mean, there shouldn't be ridiculous expectations on what the investigator or the person proposing a thesis.
And the other thing, Jay, on top of it, the other thing on top of that is, of course, is also working with the available material. And I was surprised. I've been looking at things like, there were some questions, for example, about the police officer. I forget his name at the moment. I'll pull it up here in a second. But the police officer that was shot, there was some, interesting things with the footage there. And I was thinking, God, there's got to be some other people that have seen this, on the streets there. Maybe they've filmed it. Maybe they even took some photos or something around the event, even afterwards. Let's say, bullet holes in the pavement or something like that to verify the story, to try to get closer to it, because that's always where it's lacking, I feel. And now we're secondary level here where it's in French as well. So people who don't speak French are limited there as well. So there's just not enough material in some cases to have an absolute determination. That's what I feel anyway.
Yeah, I was up late, plugging links into Google and into Google Translate, trying to figure out details. What we got with the Boudemien or whatever her name was, I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, but the supposed girlfriend of Koulibaly, she had, suspicious aspects of her situation where she was, your average a modernist type of girl, your modern girl hanging out at the mall taking selfies, and then suddenly she, dons a burqa and is shown
right.
in a very, very theatrical picture with a crossbow. I mean, I don't know. that to me sounds
right.
A little fishy, but
yeah.
It's just sort of the cutout, right? The cardboard cutout type of situation. And so what you could have, Patrick Henningsen and I were talking as this was all going down, and he said, you know, I think they're going to write her out of this script. We won't see her. And he was right. That's exactly what happened. She disappeared. So in other words, just as an example, she could be possibly some kind of handler. She could be some kind of middle person who was maybe organizing this or running this. And she's out of the picture. She's gone. And the other people, you know, one or two may have been, you know, the low IQ dupe, her boyfriend. Whereas with these brothers, you know, there's immediate questionable aspects there with the ID showing up in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Not what we would expect from a trained professional killer. And I've seen responses to that. People saying, well, you know, maybe they thought they would hit some sort of ID point and they needed to have an ID. Again, you know, that those kinds of details can get very speculative. But like you said, I mean, I think if we step back and we look at the patterns that I've noticed, and this is not just me, this is, you know, I've read several works on patterns of terror, synthetic terror by Tarpley is an excellent book, as well as many other biographies on espionage and spies. You'll find these things come up very frequently, right? These are not, you know, the false flag event is not something unknown to history. It's very common. You know, Machiavelli talks about it in his Art of War. You know, this is an ancient tactic. It's nothing new. So we shouldn't be surprised that this is an idea out there. I listed just seven that I thought were pretty common. You have a mainstream media build up or rollout of you know, discussions of terror. When the event happens, we often see ready made placards. Oftentimes in foreign countries, these placards will be in English. So that's one good sign. Or one, not a good sign, but
I guess what you're saying.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Questionable videos or details of the event come out. And yes, I understand that a lot of times these are, as they say, fluid events and the details are changing. Nevertheless, significant details will be forgotten, left out, edited, and never explained or returned to.
Mm, yeah.
There will oftentimes be drills that function as the covers, military training for the perpetrators and the terror suspects with deep state connections will usually have a rap sheet while they run free. Now, this for me was the big indicator. CNN, in fact, ran a whole tremendously surprising report about Koulibaly. I'm probably not pronouncing that right, but he had a long rap sheet of terror conviction and incarceration. And
he's the guy in the kosher store, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. He wanted to, the boyfriend of the femme fatale.
Right.
He wanted to get revenge for Rachmid Ramda, the 1995 radical Islamic bomber in France of the subway who killed eight. Well, he wanted to get revenge for that. And so he was part of the same terror network and cell. That, to me, is the big indicator. And like you said, whether that is a created narrative for media or whether that really happened, I'm not saying that it doesn't matter whether it happened. The effect of this event is the same, right? So that the usefulness of it for the state in this regard is the same, regardless of whether or not you believe that these details are invented or this person is invented or the video footage is invented. The effect is still the same.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it doesn't really, I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but in terms of the effect, the purpose of the event, it doesn't matter. And he, of course, had a tremendous rap sheet. Again, convicted of terror, and then another big indicator, meeting with Sarkozy in 2009. That is a big puzzle piece here, because other people have said, well, that's not that big of a deal, because presidents meet with, you know, under underprivileged and people seeking jobs all the time. Well, mm-hmm. it is a big deal if this is a person who had a prior terrorism conviction.
Did he at that age, though? Did he at that age when he met Sarkozy? Do we know?
Yeah, he did. In fact, you should look up the CNN report on him. Again, I couldn't believe they ran that. But again, I guess they figured it doesn't really matter. Nobody's going to do anything about it, so it doesn't really matter. I don't know why sometimes they will say this. But the CNN report says, yeah, he was in jail in the 90s, I believe, for terror convictions. Let loose, running around, and then, meets with Sarkozy, wanting a job. That's another indicator. He says, I want a job. So in other words, this guy kind of looks like a PR cutout. Like he's a PR image for the establishment. And so the media after these events, going back to my indicators, presents a false dialectic of some kind between, say, polarizing viewpoints for the public to consume, between radicalism or some sort of bizarre liberalism or cultural Marxism. You're either with Charlie Hebdo or you're with, Sarkozy or Hollande and the state, as if those were the, or you're with the Muslims, right? So right. Maybe a trialectic. You've only got three options there, and it's got to be one of those three.
Yep.
The investigators and key individuals in the event end up dead or, as we say, suicided. And of course we saw that, and that's another big indicator.
Has more come out on that, by the way? I know that some people, I guess, again, they question it and whatnot, but has there been more confirmation on that story?
I don't know. Again, I'm sort of only up to date on certain aspects of this. Like you said,
sure. No worries.
Yep. Amount of information. So on that, I don't know, but, yeah. I think, I don't think that's going to go away. I mean, it's almost like the, it's almost like they had this same checklist. Like,
yeah.
Like as we're doing this, we need to be sure to get all these. Check all the,
well, you know, I don't want to get overtly complicated with everything here. I don't want to get, you know, because it's enough as it is. But at the same time, you know, sometimes I've wondered about these when these kinds of events occur, because usually some aspects of them are very fine executed, they're detailed, other aspects are just so sloppy, and it's almost to me sometimes that they like want to leave a trail here to, on some weird other kind of level, leave that potentiality of another wedge issue further down the line perhaps. I mean, to a certain extent, look at how 9/11 has shattered a lot of things in America, for example, right, between people even. And I mean, it's this idea that either you're so brainwashed you just take the state narrative and media narrative and that's it. And then you have those people who look into it, and they, with the aid of a sloppy media on top of it, you know, just basically say, yeah, like, you're crazy to believe this narrative because there are so many inconsistencies. And it's almost like they want to leave a trail of inconsistencies so that these later down the road, you know, this can be in some way or another be a polarizing issue. I'm not sure if that is the case, but it's almost a suspicion, I feel, you know.
Well, again, yeah. That is not a new idea. That is an old idea. In the Art of War, just let me list a couple ideas here that Machiavelli gives. He says, these are tactics to use against your enemy. He says, consult a rising enemy or possible sedition to give the impression of heeding his ideas and win him by feigned interest. Send wise men into the enemy's camp as fake attendants or a fake dignitary to assess them. Use false defectors to be spies in the enemy's camp. Capture the enemy's commanders to gain intelligence on the opponent. If you have suspected spies in your camp, disseminate false information to various parties to see how the enemy reacts to which.
Yeah.
Sacrifice a town or some pawns as a gambit to give the enemy a false sense of security. Disguise your soldiers as the enemy. I mean, on and on and on. In other words, it's almost like Machiavelli was being Machiavellian.
Exactly. Yeah.
But no, you're absolutely right. I think there's definitely going to be rabbit trails, red herrings, false leads, if it is a scripted event. So that's why I've said, back to previous, when I've written on previous what appear to be false flag events, to not get caught up in many of the details, because they're not going to match up. And I think that's definitely at times on purpose. And we've seen that. I mean, if you go back to Sandy Hook, I don't want to get off topic, but just as an example, I mean, if you were to try to follow any detail of the Sandy Hook event, it would be impossible. I mean, it's a never ending trail of trying to figure out this kid's picture of that kid. You know, you'll never get to the bottom of it. And again, that doesn't mean you don't look at details. You do look at details, but you don't get bogged down in details because, you know, Machiavelli would tell you not to get bogged down in details because it could be false leads.
Right.
Yeah. Just summing up here, my last two initial indicators, the media will immediately have some cut out. They will have fingered some low IQ patsies based on the appearance of an ID magically. We know about 9/11.
Passport.
Correct. Yep. This also happened in the Malaysian plane in Ukraine, the downing of the Malaysian plane. The perfect passports appeared that were propagated by Western media, identifying all the persons aboard the plane. They were also undamaged. Again, not saying that that's necessarily proof that it was false or didn't happen. It's just a questionable incident. I mean, you know, this plane is basically annihilated. Yet we have completely perfect passports, and the passports' dates are questionable. They don't end up according to the images given to the media. And then finally, the predictable results of the terror events, you know, who stands to gain? Generally speaking, the state stands to gain. Private security contractors stand to gain. Military industrial complex type situation. That's who stands to gain. And the calls are always for more militarization, more surveillance, more police state.
Yeah.
And when we think about things like the Project for New American Century, which called for, the Wesley Clark type of seven nations plan, a pattern in the Middle East. When we look at something like PNAC, that called for more militarization, more surveillance, more police state, for the purpose of waging the, in that document, you know, the neoconservative attack pattern for the Middle East. So that, again, is yet another example of this pre-scripting and then this call for more centralization, more control. But again, all of that is, again, not to reject your point that the cultural war is very real. In other words,
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like World War II. I mean, in World War II, the banksters are funding both Nazism and Sovietism. You know, London and New York funding both of those movements. And that doesn't mean that World War II wasn't real, right?
Right. Yeah.
So the cultural war is real. They like to have, of course, the real clash of civilizations. And this is also the Samuel Huntington neoconservative plan, the clash of civilizations. So absolutely.
Yeah. And it creates a bigger rift, of course, at home as well. Those, of course, who are feeling threatened by what's happening in their own country. And then those who say, what are you worrying about? Everything is fine, you know. But let's see. Let me back up a little bit. A couple of good points that you mentioned here. And it's, you know, if we take that, what you read from Machiavelli there, you know, the question might come up, well, wait a minute, you know, why would they do this, right? Why would the state do something like this? And we have the incentives that you mentioned. And then at the same time, you know, if the people are viewed as the enemy, if they are in a position where they more or less have control of these other entities that are allegedly terrorists, they want to, you know, execute another phase in the Middle Eastern plan, let's say. Then it becomes more about, you know, also using this event to scare people into submission back home, if you will. It's about using this event against people as a crackdown on the on internet, you know, free speech, more surveillance, etc. The list just goes on and on. And even if then we come to a conclusion at some point, okay, it turns out it wasn't a false flag for whatever reason, then all of these things will fall into place anyway, right? So that's how it's used, and but the fact is, of course, if we can point out the inconsistencies in these events and show it even more, hopefully we'll get more people on our side that can view this from multiple angles than just the one and be dragged into it in this way, because it's definitely about shattering, I feel, the rifts back home again. I mean, look at just how all of Paris were, you know, joining hands, right, all of a sudden, and they were touting freedom of speech, and we won't be silenced, we're not going to be scared, you know. And then at the same time, France has a long history of you know, silencing a lot of people that are, you know, considered to be politically incorrect. They even excluded, you know, Le Pen from National Front, you know, to be part of the march, for example. So it's this tremendous amount of hypocrisy within the liberal mindset that comes out of France, which I think is very important to point out as well.
Absolutely. The hypocrisy of the Charlie Hebdo situation is interesting because the magazine is also questionable. And again, I don't have any proof that anybody there was any kind of agent. I don't know. But when I look at the history of that publication, they had a definite perspective all the way back to when they were a previous publication supporting NATO, being critical of de Gaulle. Now, regardless of whether you are pro-NATO or pro-de Gaulle or whatever, de Gaulle clearly opposed at times the Anglo-American establishment, and that got him in some trouble. And so the magazine sided with NATO at that point, according to its history, which would lead me to think that it, you know, it clearly had, it was clearly not this neutral magazine as it is presented at, you know, oh, we lampoon everybody like the Onion or something like that. They were clearly part of some agenda. And then all the way up until the present, we saw them supporting NATO in the Ukraine. They were a pro-Kiev. So, and again, regardless of what you think of the Kiev-Russia situation, that shows that the magazine has a specific position. I dug up, actually, a 2013 issue of the magazine where they had the cartoonists being shot by Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, exactly.
So that, again, is that does not necessarily mean, it's a non sequitur to say that that necessarily means that they planned the shooting. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I believe their offices were threatened a number of times.
Had,
so I guess
they had been firebombed,
yeah,
correct?
It doesn't come out of the blue, I guess.
Correct. So that, in other words, it has this provocative element to it. You know, possibly this you know, agitprop kind of situation where it's designed to provoke, again, like the Jalan's Poston Muhammad cartoon controversy of 2005 mm-hmm. to 2012,
yep.
Of the Van Gogh individual who lost his life from
Theo Van Gogh, yeah, the grandson of the famous painter, yep, stabbed in the back a number of times.
And that was a fatwa, and we think of back to Salman Rushdie, right, getting the fatwa issued against him for the satanic verses. So,
yeah,
you know, these individuals, that does not prove that they had any sort of deep state agent work, but from an outsider's objective perspective, the work that they're doing is provocative, okay? So the magazine had a function of provocation and polarization. Okay, so that's part of its function. And again, after the event, like you said, a large terror event like this is a psychological operation on the public. That's the whole point of it. It's a psychological attack on the public that achieves various ends for the deep state. And so, to think of this as in other words, that's real. Okay. So it's as the provocation is as real as the Islamic growth in Europe is real. That's very real. Okay.
Yeah.
So
it is.
It is a powder keg. And it, either way, it serves the interests of, you know, I guess you could, in geopolitical terms, correctly call the Atlanticist establishment, you know, EU. UK, America and Israel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite interesting to see how Netanyahu tried to use this as well and be some kind of beacon for the Western world in some of his speeches around this. It's kind of hilarious to see that. And he even tried to get all the Jews to go back to Israel as a side effect of this, you know?
One of the skeptics who was interacting with me said, well, why didn't they use some sort of, if this was a Palestinian issue, if it was a false flag and it was done for the purpose of getting France back into line with the Washington regime.
Like punishing them for this?
Right. Yeah. Right. If that was the case, then it would have been done by Palestinians. Well, not necessarily, because if it's the way Gladio operated, and I think that if we look at cases like the Breivik shootings, they also match up to Gladio. What you have is deep state cells, and the way the terror cell model works is you have a cell that's activated at a certain point. So it just depends on what the cell is. And so this cell happened to be, according to the reports, connected to Al-Laki, connected to Yemen. And so that just happened to be the cell that was activated. Okay. So it doesn't really have anything to do with the cell having to be Palestinian or having to be this or that. All you need is a radical Islamic terror cell. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I'm just responding to the various objections that have come out. But I do think that was probably part of it. I think that, and again, it's hard to know what elements of the French government's actions are theatrical, because, you know, Hollande was talking about not having sanctions against Russia.
Right.
Talking about, yeah. You know, supposedly voting for the vote for Palestinian statehood. I think that there's a good chance that plays into it. So it could have been utilized to rein them back in. But I do want to be very clear that I don't think that you're wrong in saying that there's obviously an Islamic component to this. I mean, I can see this in the U.S. I mean, you know, growing up, there were never Muslims in my small town, right? Mm-hmm. And the college that I attended. Now there are quite a few. That's not xenophobia. That's not hatred. it's an objective fact of what's before my eyes. So that's an importation, and it's not hard to figure out that if you want to bring down a population, you import a foreign populace. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
We also have a huge influx of Mexicans in this area.
Yeah,
that was not here when I was in grade school. I mean, so it's very real, right?
Yeah.
And anybody who is not honest about that is just being PC or is just part of some progressive leftist agenda, because it's just not being honest.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see here, because now a lot of people take the view then that maybe they're trying to overcompensate, maybe on both ends of the spectrum. It feels like it's kind of trying to formulate my thoughts here, because, you know, at the same time, you do have a kind of you have a radicalization of people that come into, let's say, Europe or the West, if they don't feel at home there, right? You have cultural freezing, you have this idea that they feel they need to cling on to their heritage even more. Another author pointed out that you do have kind of an underclass of sorts developing in a lot of these countries. Sweden is particularly true of this, because it's so difficult to employ people, for example. The taxes are sky high, so very few employers are taking any chances to, for example, you know, taking the risk of employing someone who maybe doesn't speak the language as well, etc. You know, so you have that issue on top of it. And that is kind of leading, you know, to a kind of a radicalization, a desperate clinging on of seeking something in an environment where you know that you don't belong, right? Because, I mean, think about it. All of this, despite if you view that this is a false flag, or if you view that, you know, it's all real and my God, these Muslims are crazy, we, you know, whatever it is. None of it would even be plausible or even believable if it wasn't for the forced and the imposed multiculturalism that we've attained in the West. If this just came out of the blue, if we had homogenous populations in Europe, very few people would believe that something like this would even be real. Sure, they might have tried something else, but that's my point. This it's enabled to be believed due to the situation that we find ourselves in, and at the same time, that doesn't mean that there isn't issues and cultural, you know, conflict going on the street levels, not like these shootings, but minor things and other types of, you know, cultural conflicts, violent crimes and things like that. It's happening, you know?
Yeah, what this again harkens to Gladio, it's the strategy of tension, and that's a deep state tactic that comes out of the Cold War and Gladio, where you divide, manipulate, and control public opinion with these kinds of psychological warfare events, with provocateurs, agitprops, so forth, and with false flags. So, yeah, for this to work, it's got to be real. Okay, so you've got to have real clashes between these cultures. You've got to have a real powder keg, a real melting pot that where people don't get along. Now, I would just simply say a couple books come to mind that make this point. And these are by individuals who tend to have more of a left view, but they back up a lot of what I'm saying. Mark Curtis's book, Secret Affairs, The Collusion of Radical Islam, The Collusion of Britain and Radical Islam. That's a really good book. I read that a few years ago. And he details in, you know, 500 pages with extensive, copious footnotes, the long history of British imperial tactics using radical Islam. Okay. And I mean, we know about back to Lawrence of Arabia and things like that, where the Saudis were chosen as the tribe to kind of be the ruling cartel in that area. And they had a partnership with the British Empire. The British Empire actually sent letters to praising Islam, you know, 100 years ago. So this is nothing new. This is 100 years old, 100 year old tactic. Been going on for a long time, and they needed real clashes, real terror, real events to achieve the objective. So, and again, that objective is ultimately, as we know, global government, and that has to come through the dissolution of the existing cultures and social structures that are.
So yeah, exactly.
The best way to do that is to utilize all these kinds of Machiavellian tactics to destroy and weaken the enemy. So,
and another point there too, which is important, I feel, it's that, you know, we have to use these terms. You know, you say the British Empire and we say the West, etc., but that doesn't mean the people of these countries. That doesn't mean, you know, that all the people in Britain are going to be benefiting from the situation that the British Empire is trying to seek. It's beyond that now, where the state apparatus, the globalists, the elite are using multiculturalism, they're using terrorism and all these things to create what they deem to be, you know, the new world order, basically. And that's why I see that it's not like this then becomes outside of that polarized discussion, whether it's, you know, Western people doing this against, you know, poor Muslims, for example, or something like that, right? It's much more than that. And to a certain extent, people also say, you know, well, this, you know, don't point attention to this because this is divide and conquer, or, you know, something like that. But the fact is, we've been divided. That's why we were first on the earth. The nations were divided by default. We had homogenous populations. Doesn't mean that we had to war with each other, but it means that the melting pot, as you say, this immense just clashing together of these different cultures and religions, in a very quick time span, in a very radical and forceful way, is what is enabling what we're seeing happening in the world right now, if you ask me anyway.
Yeah, let's put it on a local level. I mean, how many, I don't know what it's like in Sweden, but I'm guessing with human nature being what it is, probably not very different. In the South, we have this idea that goes back a long time of a boss hog. And if you think of the character in the Dukes of Hazzard, that cheesy 70s American show. The small town is kind of run by this you know, good old boy type of character who basically has bought off the police department. You know, in my small town, there have been cops plenty of times who've been caught drug running. Okay. And mm-hmm. so the cops have teamed up with the thugs. Now I'm not saying the whole department. I'm just saying that's a classic, you know, example, or Serpico. Most people know about the story of Serpico. Now, yep. So that's a local example that a lot of people can probably identify with, where we see this, we see an illustration of what happens on a macro global scale. It's not any different when you get to, you know, the people that are meeting at Davos or,
No, what are you talking? They are saints. They're above all corruption.
Right. But when you know, when you present this kind of stuff, you know, you're talking to people, you know, your average person, you know, that sounds crazy. That's not going on because it's far away. And I'm, so I always
sure,
say,
yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you probably have corruption at your local level, don't you? Right. There's a boss hog probably in your small town. Well, yeah, probably. So, you know, why people don't make the common sense connection that, you know, obviously that's going to go on at a global level. Another good book, by the way, that deals with a lot of this, Daniel Estulin's book Shadow Masters is really good because it gets into the black market side of all this kind of stuff. So when we talk about NATO, the situation with drug running comes up in that book. When we talk about opium, that ties into Afghanistan. That ties into the 'Ndrangheta, which is Italian organized crime. The P2 is Italian organized crime that was also connected to the Gladio events. And the P2 Lodge is a specific type of Grand Orient Euro masonry. And so we have the tie-in with secret societies, and we don't even have to get into, you know, devils and demon aspects of the secret societies, because if we're looking at this from the espionage deep state perspective, the secret societies tie into it just because they're networks of secrecy. Okay. And so they're used as covers for all kinds of things. And so in other words, when we look at books on espionage, all of this is it's everywhere. I mean, I'm talking classic texts on this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Stephen Dorrell's book, MI6, is full of shell companies, front companies, false flags, drug, you name it, you know, fake magazines. The MI6 set up plenty of fake publications and fake magazines to run propaganda. Much of that was done against the Soviets. So, you know, and I'm not any fan of Marxism. I'm just making the point that we have to avoid dialectics. And so there are always, at different levels of this strategic chess game, there are going to be sincere individuals. You know, there are going to be good people who are genuinely fighting Sovietism, that are genuinely fighting, you know, international, the Third International, you know, socialism, things like that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, above them are going to be people who openly, for example, in the CFR in the 1940s, like Alger Hiss, openly talked about in CFR meetings how we need to merge with the Soviet Union to have a third way.
Yeah.
So again, it's just what I think is it's like I've said before, it's like Star Trek when they're playing that weird space chess game and it's like three stories high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how it is. It's the grand chessboard, like Brzezinski talks about, and in grand chessboard, Brzezinski talks about Eurasia as the key battle ground for the next century. He talks about America losing preeminence and that things would shift eastward, and so it would be incumbent upon he talks about America, but what he means is, of course, the globalists. The technocrats, them controlling the Middle East. And so that's why, again, Afghanistan is so important. He calls it the gateway to the East. That's why the British 100 years ago fought Russia over Afghanistan, which began the Great Game. Or was a big part of the ground. I don't guess it began, the great game extended prior to the original battle for Afghanistan. But you get my point. Yep. It's just that we are sort of living through one piece of a very, very large, long-term plan. This is why you see, of course, the globalists, the white papers, you know, extending into 2025, 2050, right? And we've heard of those Rockefeller type documents, Agenda 21 type documents that are projecting plans for 2025 and 2050. And again, all of this is in Brzezinski's books. This is all, it's all there. It's all in Tragedy and Hope. You know, all these classic texts of that we hear bantered around alternative media. But when we actually go and read those, you actually go and read the, you know, the espionage books that we've talked about, you know, all this stuff is there.
Yeah, it sure is. And I think it's also about as much as getting, you know, other people drawn into the fight, getting, for example, you know, Europe and the West, possibly, you know, America and Europe even to, you know, to go fight the Arab world, to extend the conflict even further, or at the very least getting more support for that point of view, you know, which is something that's both going to be beneficial to, you know, the neocon agenda, you know, the new American century, but also Israel and the AIPAC, you know, foreign policy dictators over in America. So, you know, we have this element of them using, you know, the neocons have a lot in common with, you know, even Bolshevism to a certain extent, of exporting democracy, exporting the revolution, of trying to, you know, impose, you know, human rights and democratic values and feminism, you know, bring that to Central Asia whether this is genuine or not, I don't know, but they're definitely using that, you know, engine that exists within the West to spread out these ideas. That, I mean, ultimately that is globalization, I guess, to take whatever religion you have in whatever area, traditionalism, culture in that region, just like they've done in Europe, and taking care of that, dealing with that, and saying you're now a global individual. And at the same time, it's kind of a win-win, because as you try to do these things, as we've seen, you do get individuals who are in that capacity radicalized. They feel and they have a willpower and an intent to fight for their beliefs. And it's almost like that they can take care of all of these things at the same time. Take care of the business of those who will be radicalized. And then you can, at the same time, get a kind of overcompensation for those who try to want to have as much internationalism as we possibly can to a certain extent. I guess the only trapping I guess we can fall into, though, is this idea that, well, so we can't respond to anybody because that's what they want us to do. We can't do anything. We can't act, right? But it's a huge difference, I believe, between reacting and actually effectively responding to this and educating ourselves and standing against what we're seeing happening. I don't know how you view these questions, Jay, but it's something that I keep thinking about. It there has to be something to, you know, counteract what we're seeing happening right now.
Yeah, well, you're spot on about analyzing the problem. The creation of the reactionary consumer, we're supposed to react to events, not have any sort of context for them. And by the way, the news has a big part of that, because it plays a big part in that, because, you know, the kind of analysis that we're doing here, the kind of stuff that I try to do, is give a broader context. You'll notice the news never does that. The news always gives these, you know, bits and pieces, sound bites, where there's no context, right? So the person sitting there watching, you know, MSNBC, CNN, whatever, and seeing some 2-minute report on Al-Qaeda in Yemen doesn't have any context for understanding that Al-Qaeda is the Mujahideen set up in 1979 by Brzezinski under Carter. So they don't, there's no connect there, or no context there to understand the situation. You're just supposed to react and see this and be, it's just emotionalism. Like, you know, when you and I were discussing Hollywood, it's the same type of situation. So to have then an international consuming populace is the best way to, and that's actually where the international capitalist and the international Marxists met and had meetings and agreements at Malta in, I believe it was either 88 or 89. There was a meeting between Gorbachev, Bush Sr., and at that time Pope John Paul II. that was an important geopolitical meeting because it helped solidify the idea that the West and the East, well, Sovietism, again, like you said, I don't want to, this does not mean the average Chinese citizen or the average Russian citizen. This means the Soviet establishment, international, needed to merge with the West. And so they decided that both monopolistic capitalism and international communism had the same goals.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The CFR, you know, had been wanting that and projecting that for a long time. And what they needed to do over the next several decades from the mid 40s when the CFR had those meetings on was to erode identity. And to erode identity, entities like the RAND Corporation came in and socially engineered society. Alex Abaya's book is really good, Soldiers of Reason, that details, he admits all this, by the way, in that book, he talks about it, to erode all of these ideals, all these identities that people would have to produce what, you know, we've had EU presidents as well as Wesley Clark when he was at NATO said the nation state is dead.
Yeah.
And that what that means is erosion of identity. And so the best way to do that, yeah, we talk about toxic culture and all that. That's all true. But gender is huge in this. It's a big puzzle piece because the building block of society begins with family. And to mess people up so that they don't have any identity, the best way to start is with destroying family. So yeah. Feminism is a great way to do that. I can speak from experience from a lot of girlfriends who, and again, I'm sure I have my problems, so I don't too narcissistic and egoistic there, but I've dated some hot feminists, and let me tell you, it was not worth it. Okay. And so had we had children, boy, would that have been a nightmare. And that's an example of how these, and again, this is, you say, you know, the skeptic says, well, that's just your subjective opinion. No. This is what's taught in universities, right? How many girls major in women's studies? Completely ridiculous degree.
Yeah.
Which is just social engineering. It's just brainwashing. Again, this all this stuff is cooked up in the think tanks, RAND Corporation, so forth, to destroy the family unit. And when you destroy the family unit, you destroy tradition because the family unit is the bearer of tradition. Okay. We think about entities like religion, church, whatever. We think about, and those things are, in a way, bearers of traditions. That's definitely true. But these are made up of people, and people come from families. Babies come from moms and dads, right? Unless we're Aldous Huxley and we think that babies are going to come from test tubes. Historically, babies come from moms and dads, and they tend to function the best psychologically when they have a mom and a dad.
And, and that's a big problem. See, that's why we have to break up the tyranny of the family structure, the fascist structure, was it, of the family unit? Right?
You look back to the Paris the Paris Commune in the 1840s, 1848, if I recall, somewhere in there, the women's feminists were going crazy in the Paris Commune talking about the oppression of the patriarchy. So, you know, we think of third wave feminism, you know, being the Rockefeller's authorized biography has a whole chapter on Abby Rockefeller putting, I believe, $30 million in, you know, of 60s money.
That's right.
60s money into feminism. Well, feminism goes back a lot further. It goes back to France. So to bring it full circle, here we are back to France, the Paris Commune, which is, of course, connected to Buonarroti and the Jacobins, who were the radical.
Well exactly. I mean, this is the essence of liberalism right there with the French Revolution, and it's steeped in bloodshed, you know. So
yeah, that's the motto of the revolutionary, right? You know, liberty, equality, fraternity is none of those things. It's basically when you try to enforce equality, what ends up is, you know, millions of skulls.
Yeah. Let's not forget what he actually said there as well, because I'm glad you pointed that out. Wesley Clark, it's been brought up many times before, but the quote is, let's not forget what the origin of the problem is. There's no place in modern Europe for ethnically pure states. That's a 19th century idea. And we are trying to transition into the 21st century. And we are going to do that with multi-ethnic states, basically talking about multiculturalism. And of course, this is just a kind of a follow-on on, you know, the what people have called the Kalergi plan or Kudenhof-Kalergi, who kind of lay the ideological foundation for the European Union. So what we've been talking about here so far, and as bizarre as it might seem, but the situation is in France now is really helping just to bring this into fruition of continuing this massive struggle that they have of really eradicating humanity as we've learned to see it. And I think no other regions in the world right now are so heavily squeezed as Europe and, of course, the Middle East, where many of these wars are also, you know, happening.
Absolutely. And again, it just makes me think of, we think from an economic perspective, it makes perfect sense why international corporations would want to have a populace that doesn't have a tradition or a culture or a history, so that they would not be bearers of a tradition. Because if you think about it, that includes the trade that you have, the family business. For example, in my own past, my family had a local business that was somewhat prominent when I was young. And Walmart came and put that out.
Yeah, horrible.
It wasn't entirely what put that down, but it was a big part of what destroyed that. Now, I understand, you know, the free market and competition and all that. However, you know, that's not what this is. You know, what this is you know, Walmart is a large government entity.
It sure is, exactly.
Government money, and it's international, it's connected to China, so forth. If you are a CEO of Walmart, and you're looking at the strategic battleground of economic marketing, so forth, you're going to look at populations, say, in the South, and you're going to say, okay, well, here's a small town that has a mom and pop a general store. What we need to do is go in there and we need to, you know, destroy that so that we can, again, just monopolies, right? So to have monopolies, it requires the destruction of any family or localized business and production. And what you lose with that is quality. So you sacrifice quality and culture and tradition on the altar of saving a few fiat dollars. I mean, it's sad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It is sad. So this is obviously a long-term plan. That's another thing I guess people miss as well. They see it, you know, they might not have that full, you know, bigger picture and realize that this takes place over, it has taken place over many generations to get to the point we are today. But I don't think that the ultimate goal here, that isn't, you know, murder and mayhem and chaos and war. Those things are just kind of, you know, means to an end, really, of trying to homogenize and deracinate everybody, right?
Yeah, monoculture, right? To have a completely global culture based around the new mythologies of Hollywood. If you want an international example of the local example I just gave, think of something like Iran and the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, which is basically BP. So Iran, the Iranians, Persians, they can't have oil. That's got to be the property of BP. So what are we going to do? Well, we're going to go in and we're going to stage revolutions, stage coups, Mossadegh, all that stuff. All of that was, you know, people talk about MI6 and CIA and all that, blah, blah, blah. That's what was going on with Operation Ajax. But what that was about BP.
Yeah.
It was about oil, okay? And so when we have these foreign threats that are the boogeymen, and we go and there's a terror event, and then we go to step in to bring democracy or so forth, or when we have Twitter revolutions or Google Arab Spring revolutions or whatever, most of the time, what that's about is the higher level of expanding different corporations, Right. So it's about pipelines. That's a big part of the Middle East. It's about it's about Walmart. That's what it's about. You want to understand, if you want to understand the New World Order, you don't have to you don't really have to know all of these spy games. All you got to do is understand that, look, Walmart wants to be in Iran.
they're coming. Yeah, exactly.
That's the New World Order. Living inside a target, you know, that's the future. That's the New World Order future.
And of course, you do have agendas piggybacked up on this, where different interest groups, you know, line up with this, etc. There are, you know, even there are competitions, there are battlefields, I guess, on many different fronts here. And that's one of the reasons why they piggyback on each other, and perhaps one thing that they are going to be able to win by partnering up with one or the other, and things like this. So there's, of course, not as homogenized, if I can use that term, than on the tip of the elite either. I think there's a lot of different agendas there, but the consequence again is the same, of course, which is a tragedy of the highest order, where we have a beautiful, you know, humanity of tremendous biodiversity that is going to be sacrificed on this altar. And so obviously what we need is to analyze these events as we're doing, drawing people out of this hypnosis of what this about, what this really is about, to have them get a different view and get a different idea of what actually is happening. Because, I mean, how do you see as a hope aspect to this, of getting out of this, of actually trying to prevent what is happening? Part of me is just like, I mean, let this just beast just run into the ground. I mean, economically, even hopefully they won't be able to sustain this forever, etc. There are things along the way that hopefully would just begin to crumble and fall apart, and people with, you know, who have some kind of foot in reality and nature, human nature, will be left standing at the end of this. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, Jay, but I don't know. It's I'm both hopeless, you know, hopeful and hopeless some days, you know.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, because they're strategic planners and because they're futurists, they you know, they have things pretty well mapped out for a long time. You know, the CFR, Royal Society, groups like that have, you know, planned 50, 100 years ahead. That doesn't mean that they're invincible or that they will achieve everything. I think there have been setbacks. I think they did want a war in Syria that they didn't get. That to me seemed to be a legitimate setback. You know, as we saw U.S. politicians, you know, really, really pushing for taking down Assad, doesn't mean that I support the Ba'athist Party or am some supporter of that. You know, that's neither here nor there to me in terms of my daily existential existence. But
no, that's their business, and that's what we're trying to get to here as well. That however these people want to run their country, and even if they have an internal turmoil, isn't that up to the local population to settle those scores, to stand up to their own leadership and take charge once again of their own nation then? Because ultimately, if we create these dependencies where people are never in the capability of standing up to their own tyrannical leaders, then that's never going to happen, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's... I don't think that all cultures have within them, or all humans have within them, the same desire for self-governance that Western man has tended to have. I think
that's right. Yeah. Well, that's the fault of the equality thing here that we've been talking about.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so, for example, if we think about Afghanistan, there's a really good book on this, what is the name of it? It's Mystical Imperialism. Now, they tend to be somewhat leftist too, but it's good because they give a pretty deep background to what's going on in Afghanistan for the last 100 years. Fitzgerald and the other author's name is escaping me, but The Untold Story of Afghanistan, Mystical Imperialism, Untold History of Afghanistan is a really good geopolitical analysis of what's going on there, because these are backwoods type people. And what happens is they get co-opted into playing into these larger geopolitical games because they don't have the sophistication of understanding geopolitics. You know, this is just something that tends to be the purview of, whether you like it or not, Western man. So, you know, the classic Enlightenment era of the old progressive view that, you know, that we can just, maybe if we can, enact a global revolution where, you know, if all governments had, you know, a constitution and a declaration of independence, I don't think that is possible or makes any sense.
Yeah.
Because it's just not within the nature of certain people groups and tribes to think that way. And I've even had, oddly enough, leftist professors in my undergrad admit this kind of stuff because they would say, you know, if you have tribes and societies that, believe in a chief, coming to them with the idea of a democratic constitution is nonsensical. And I know not talking about advocating a democratic constitution. I'm just saying that a global awakening, I'm skeptical of that.
Yeah.
Having an effect. I mean, it's possible that you can have a lot of people awaken, and I think people are waking up to stuff, but what that will do, whether that will genuinely affect any sort of real change, I'm skeptical. I think that's why the globalists are mainly concerned with Western males, because Western males have the ability to think about global chess. I mean, what was the British Empire? What was, was the Anglo male? You know, that's they play the great game. The Afghani backwoods man does not. And again, that's just a fact of history. You know, whether you think that's racist or not, it doesn't matter. That's a fact of history.
Well, the difference is we have different desires. We have different, cultures. We're different times. We have different calendars. There's different things when these different cultures have developed. I mean, it's nothing wrong with that. That's like saying that all the kids on the playground need to be the same in order to play the same or something. You know, it's ridiculous. And I think that, I mean, you're right. It might literally be, for some people at least, that piggybacks on the agenda we've been talking about, that actually hold this pipe dream of bringing the wonders of Western liberalism to the world, of freedom and, human rights. And in reality, there are a lot of people out there that don't give a shit about this stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
They just want to live their lives,
They want to do, they're interested in what the chief says.
Exactly. And that's good. I respect that. I like that, right. Because.
Yeah. So, the idea of that's actually just an older colonial idea, pre-colonial idea that was part of the Enlightenment ethos, that Enlightenment liberalism, again, which we see in the figures of the Jacobins and the Girondins. You have kind of a right-wing revolutionary Girondin view, and you have the left-wing radical communist view in Paris. And that left-wing view, because it doesn't understand human nature, has a tendency to get very frustrated with human nature and then want to stamp it out.
Exactly. That's right.
Because they don't achieve the proletariat revolution that the revolutionaries want. But again, at a higher level, that's all funded by, of course, international banks and so forth. So again, I'm rambling on, but the point I would say is that I don't know how my view with this regime is that because it's so anti-human, that it won't work in the long run because its foundations are because they're self-destructive.
Exactly. Yeah. They're working against nature and human nature.
They're working against themselves because they're still human, even though they want to think that they're not. So,
yeah. It won't stand. I see it kind of like they're building, is one of those games where they're building, you're trying to build as high as you can, maybe not in the beginning as quickly as you can, but it kind of turns into that, the higher up you go and the wind is kind of blowing and, exactly. If you have a very unstable, foundation to that thing, it's not going to work. And right now what's happening is they have a tremendous momentum. They're building, up as much as they can, but instead of, putting a, a foundation of four blocks down to be able to continue to build up. They put two or maybe even one on top of each other, and they're trying to get as high as they can on that ladder, you know. But the reality is, it's not going to work in the long run. And I think, you know, as their empire expands outward, as they're trying to centralize, they are going to lose control more and more in these smaller regions, and eventually might turn into some kind of global, you know, civil war or something like that. And this machine will never be able to, you know, keep tabs on all of this. I don't think it's going to work for them.
I don't think in the long run, no. Things will probably get a lot worse before they get better. But
yeah,
here's an example why I think that this won't in the long term pan out. Take something like beauty. There are scientific based studies that demonstrate that the normal healthy male prefers a certain type of woman that he finds beautiful. You know, she needs to generally have a healthy figure, and we all know that universally, you know, blue-eyed blonde babes are preferred. the establishment is so ridiculous in their push to re-engineer man that they promote things like fat acceptance.
Now, I just saw that yesterday. I was wondering if you're going to bring that up. That's funny. This Paul Joseph Watson did a really good video on that.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, and my God. It's just
I've been watching this for a couple years. I couldn't believe a couple years ago when I saw fat acceptance. Now, yeah, you have to get everybody fat with GMOs and poison food, I guess, to get them to accept it. But I don't think that you're going to ever convince everybody that fat is beautiful.
No, okay? No.
And I'm not meaning to be rude here. I'm being honest, because it's just not true.
Well, look at that video, folks. I'll link it up if you want to understand what we're talking about here. Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
So when we look at people like Bertrand Russell and the, say, Royal Society Fabian types who projected these kinds of things, we look at Brave New World. The idea is that, well, because man has no nature, we can just literally program him to prefer or like whatever we want. And I think that when it gets to the point of aesthetics, when there's an attempt to enforce everyone to like what is not attractive, what's not beautiful,
yeah,
I don't think that's going to, in the long term, work.
No, no.
There's a great, great Russian film called Branded. If you've never seen that, I highly recommend it.
It's a good one. I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, because the corporation in it wants to make everybody fat, and they try to use like reality TV shows to convince the population that fat's beautiful. So that aspect of it I thought was really good. But yeah, I mean, that
they have to continue to push, Jay. That's the point as well, that it might, you know, we had Paul Gottfried on the show. He mentioned a couple of good things about this, but I ended up asking him about human nature, you know, and like I said, well, you can never, you know, you can never truly change that. And he said, well, I've actually been surprised of how long it's they've been able to work. It's almost like they pulled off in changing us. But what I forgot to add to that was that, well, the only reason it's working is because we are under continuous pressure all the time from media, from entertainment, from Hollywood, from music videos, all these things. But as soon as that programming lets go, and I mean, a lot of people don't even fall for it to begin with, but those who do only do it because it's a constant pressure. It's like that, you know, like a you know, inflatable ball under the, you know, ocean or under the water or something like that. As soon as you let go, that thing's going to pop to the surface. It's the same thing. We're going to fall back into human nature as long as that pressure is not going to be constant on us. And that's why it's going to fail, you know?
Yeah, that's why they have to try to do a chemical attack. They have to try to alter even our DNA because that's the only way to really achieve this. So that I think is probably the most dangerous aspect of this, you know, and this is very speculative, but you know, with nanotech and stuff like that, that might be possible. However, you make a great point there that from their perspective, they have to keep doing it. They have to keep pushing and they have to keep going further.
Exactly.
It can't just stop at fat acceptance. It has to go on to, you know, bestiality. It has to go further and further and further. And I just don't think that in the long run, everybody's going to succumb to that. I mean, it's just not, I just don't see how that would ever pan out.
No.
You're not going to have everybody screwing animals. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah. But some probably will if it's hip, you know, if it's in the media.
Well, take the type of model where they probably want to go is something like some kind of Aztec thing where everybody's cannibalizing and sacrificing everybody else. That was done to a certain type of population that we were talking about before was not like Western man.
No.
I don't think, now granted, there have been times when Western man was, say Druids or something like that, where they did practice human sacrifice. But I don't think that you're going to get the entire population. I just don't think you're going to, how are you going to get everyone in the world to accept the exact same culture, the exact same beliefs, the exact same everything? And that's what it requires. It's too much it's a too tall of an order.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Very good point. Now, of course there's endless more we could add to this, Jay, but if we just for a moment kind of return back to France and Paris a little bit here, I did want to ask you if there's anything else of some of the major, argument points for those who still might be skeptical in terms of, you know, either false flag or how it's being used, if there's something we should add to the discussion, before we wrap up when it comes to, let's say, some of the evidence, or is there any of this that you feel you need to like look into more to be able to determine? Because I know that some people, again, I don't want to draw it too far away, but you know, there's some people out there, they think that the whole thing was, you know, staged, for example, the whole thing was, you know, manipulated just for the cameras, etc. And I personally don't buy that. Although there's, as I said, the shooting of the police officer, that footage is kind of strange when it comes to look, it looks like, you know, they're missing the head on him and whatnot. But I mean, these are people with real lives. They've had families, they're paying bills, you know, they're unless they go to like, you know, false flag island somewhere and live a happy life ever after and have agreed to never see their families again, that I don't see how they're going to be able to pull that off. I don't know what your view is on that, on the whole thing, everything, it's fake or staged thing, you know?
I think that, this is speculation on my part, I think that the reason that they do the sloppy events at times, the reason entire events are staged at times, and the reason they do real events at times is because that itself can be kind of a deeper psychological trick, psychological warfare trick, where the public and even the investigative section of the public, it just ends up confused. People end up debating, whether this detail of the footage was real, and it's a waste of time. And if you can get everybody debating minutiae and not looking at the bigger context, bigger issues that we've been talking about this whole time, then you've neutralized anybody who might investigate and make a good point.
Right. Yeah.
because like Brzezinski says, you know, two weeks later, nobody's even going to remember the video. Now,
no, exactly.
Yeah. Conspiracy realm, yeah, but maybe to make that a little more realistic, 2 years from now, people are not going to be remembering the Kouliabli or whatever his name is. Just like most people do not have Theo van Gogh or the Dutch situation in mind. Most people had forgotten Breivik. I was surprised that... the first thing I thought of was Breivik. This event went down, and looking around, I saw maybe one or two sites mention Breivik. Patrick Henningsen mentioned it. So, you know, people have already forgotten that Euro terror event.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's far up there in Scandinavia. No one gives a shit about that anyway.
So that the establishment knows this kind of stuff. They know that people aren't thinking about, you know, 2 years ago news. So, what I would say is, again, to just sort of look at the big picture, look at the key point of all this is, there've been numerous mainstream reports that talk about, these specific individuals training in training for Syria, training for jihad operations in Syria. They were part of a terrorist cell that had obvious Western connections that broke on Fox with the Al-Awlaki dining at the Pentagon right after or right before 9/11. And so these individuals, according to the mainstream narrative, are connected to Al-Awlaki. Now, for the skeptic, that puts you in a strange situation, because if the horns of a dilemma, if the thesis that I'm presenting is false, if the views that I'm presenting are false, then that means that all of these mainstream reports that the skeptic might put trust in are also false. And so the skeptic is in no better position than we are, right? So again, because, do you see what I'm saying?
Exactly. And it's even like the mainstream, Jay. It's like the mainstream reporting or whatever. They're neither here nor there. They're like they refuse to accept a false flag, but at the same time, they're trying to kind of accept a narrative of radical Islam as the same time as they're kind of pushing. But you know, we can't have some kind of outrage against Muslims here. So they're trying to do everything at once and nothing at the same time. And most people are just kind of, I guess that's part of the trauma-based mind control, if you want to use that term, that people are just so confused as to what to do or what to think. So they see, like, because think about it, on the mainstream media, you see a lot of these kinds of, you know, horrible, you know, false flag attacks and things like that occurs. But at the same time, you're not allowed to be Islamophobic, and they're downplaying and not reporting on true and real events that actually happened towards, for example, with the intensified rape rates in Sweden. They're downplaying everything that actually is real and uplifting the shit that they have controlled and that's fake, you know?
Yeah, I see not mainstream reported stories all the time about immigration violence in the UK. There are stories that happen in the U.S. all the time that are not reported about illegal aliens. And again, because of the PC situations, the news won't report that.
That's right. Exactly.
But it obviously happens, right? So,
yeah.
Again, but key things to remember are, again, the West funding Islamic groups. We think of McCain going and meeting with the Free Syrian Army, these Al-Qaeda affiliated groups. And I agree that ISIS is just a rebranding of all that same stuff. What else do you need other than the fact that, you know, the West funds these things?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I say the West, I'm talking about, of course, you know, the sort of the Washington establishment, the NGOs, the think tanks. You know, we think about the Boston bombing comes to mind with the Tsarnaev brothers, you know, being radicalized under Western NGOs, right?
So they're
working with Western NGOs. They come back again.
They come back and they're let in again as well. That's the other point of this, you know, complete no border control when it comes to the European Union. We even had the Spanish Minister of Interior, Diaz, what's his first name again, George Fernandez, that, you know, openly is just saying that, you know, Europe is just let back under over 600 known terrorists into Europe again that was previously in Syria and Iraq. It's like, all right, so this begins to, you know, so even if there's now consequently attacks here, it doesn't even mean that those are going to be false flag either. It might just basically mean that we do have actually radicalized, you know, terrorists back in Europe that are seeking, you know, certain targets now. But the point being, they've actively let down the guard, and that's what it's about.
Right. We think of, you know, I mentioned one of my articles, the Unabomber, because he actually was an MK Ultra test subject, according to his obituary. I did not mean by that to imply or say that I thought necessarily that, you know, Breivik or these terrorists in Paris were necessarily mind controlled or anything like that. Again, I don't have details on that or any kind of inside knowledge of any of that. What I do know is in other words, all we have to do is take what is presented, look at that, and if it doesn't add up, that right there is suspicious.
Yeah.
That's the key. Exactly. That's the key point here. Yeah. If we think about Benghazi, you know, there were CIA reports that discussed, Claire Lopez had a report discussing the hiring of a radical Islamic security group.
Really? So
you're going to hire a radical Islamic Blue Mountain security group with Muslim Brotherhood ties to guard the so-called consulate. I mean, that's just that whether it's, again, whether it's aspects of it are staged or not, it's, you know, it's real. The effect is achieved.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
Whatever works is it's pragmatism. Whatever works is the point of view of the establishment. Another important thing to think about is, you know, there was the Cold War, and that then suddenly all the concern about Marxism disappeared. Right. And then it suddenly became a global war on terror. Right.
Yeah.
Did all the Marxists suddenly disappear?
Right.
Did they just go away? Did suddenly the whole world repent and like convert away from Marxism? No. I went to a school where I had Marxists, you know, barking disgusting things in my face all day. So they didn't go away. They're still there. But according to mainstream reporting and narratives, suddenly everything switched to the global war on terror.
Mm, yeah.
So that again suggests deep level social engineering by, you know, big think tanks like the Rand Corporation. And when we, again, thinking about these, the bigger perspective allows us to look at specific events like Paris and to put them in a context that says, who does this event? Who gains advantage from this? Is it radical Islam? Not really. I mean, it solidifies the state. It solidifies the EU. It brings together, you know, everybody into a kumbaya moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And so it has a globalist effect of, you know, well, let's all stand together. And if you're not with us, or if you question this event, well, then you must be, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists.
Exactly. Said. Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. I mean, I hearken back on that all the time, but I want to point out the hypocrisy of the immense attacks on someone like Le Pen, and just look at how the mainstream media is treating her and her party when she's the only alternative that is against this centralized dictatorship of the European Union. She's the only political option to this. And yes, she is one of these people, these radical people, right, that actually thinks that France should be for French people, you know, so how about that?
Yeah, I mean, and Front National and its platform is pretty milquetoast.
It is. That's just it. Exactly. I mean, they're trying to point her out as this, like, radical Nazi, basically, you know, or something like that, and it's just
if you're a heterosexual male, they call you Nazi.
That's true. That is true.
The feminists that say attack my website and have in the past, I mean, if I like women, they call me a Nazi. That's just ridiculous. So these people should just be laughed at, and they should actually be made fun of and scorned.
Oh, definitely, exactly.
Best way to oppose them. But yeah, and again, I don't mean to all, when I hearken back to the West funding terror, the whole point of saying that is just to try to establish the thesis that it's a false flag. That does not mean that there's not a culture war that's designed by global think tanks, because there is. And that battle, that clash of civilizations is real, and it needs to be real for them to achieve an agenda. And that does not mean that we shouldn't fight and we should all just have a big hold hands kumbaya, because that also feeds into the globalist narrative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because what that feeds into is, well, you don't have any identity. You don't have any tradition. You got to give all that up, because it also is able to paint tradition and culture as automatically radical. Right. So if you have a tradition or a culture, you must therefore be in some way a radical, a reactionary, and you're not marching into, you know, the global. You're not a good global citizen.
Exactly. And that might sound radical to people to have that view, but that's what we have now actually happening. This is how majority of people are being treated. And if you actually look at some of their, you know, what they've said or whatever, if they're painted out as being these, you know, just massive bigots or something like that, or these horrible, you know, racists or what have you, what they've said and what they've done and what they think or whatever is very, very, you know, mellow. It's very, in some cases, reasonable. Of course, it's extremists out there. I'm not saying that, but at the same time, it's like they're trying. But I think that that's one of the things why they're going to fall as well, right? Because they're overcompensating. They're trying so hard with negative association that it's going to, you know, it's going to fire back on them. It's going to be, people are going to be so angry about that and upset about that, that hopefully, you know, they'll grow out of that, and eventually they'll get to a position where they just learn to ridicule their enemy, because this is ridiculous. We're living in this complete fabrication fantasy bubble, you know?
Here's another concrete example of that where it didn't work. And again, I'm not a big gamer. I didn't really follow this too in depth because it's not an issue that I'm that concerned with. I don't really have time for video games, but the Gamergate situation involved actual NGO feminist women's organization individuals trying to infiltrate gaming communities. Now, yeah, I mean, I would rather guys be out doing other things than playing video games. But what I thought was very illustrative and funny about it was that there were feminists were trying to, I don't know what they were trying to do, but they're trying to force some kind of equality in video games, where supposedly video games needed to, you know, portray more feminist characters. Well, the whole of the video gaming community basically just shot that down. And so they weren't having it.
Yeah.
And that's a little example of, you know, guys are going to like, you know, buxom, hot chicks, hot blondes. Okay. You're not going to force everybody to want to like some big old fat barrel broad. You know what I mean?
it's just the harsh reality of biology, and those people who don't face that, you know,
on the ground when these freaks and weirdos try to enforce everybody to love their psychological problems, it's not going to work.
No, it's not. Well, that's good, Jay. You know, that's something that we actually have working towards our advantage, that the more they continue with this absolute insanity, really, which it is, and completely antithetical to human nature, the more people are going to be pushed away by that. And I think that that's a really positive thing. So
people are getting tired of being PC too.
Definitely.
They're getting tired of that.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
At a certain point, people are just going to not care. And they're going to say, you know, if I can't talk about what's right in front of my face, you know, I don't give a shit anymore. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yep. And that's the point they need to get to as well. Of you know, stop worrying about these, and I'm always so, it almost bugs me when, you know, you have certain people, let's say even in Hollywood or celebrities usually, but sometimes it can be politicians too, but they say something, and then, you know, oh my God, you know, there's a Twitter hashtag storm, what have you, and then they crawl back to that cross and beg for forgiveness, you know, to the elite or something like that. I just wish there was just one of these people who just, like, you know, said, you know what, fuck you. These are my opinions, and this is it, you know? So take it or leave it. Yeah, and seriously as well, in this world of, you know, a multitude of pluralist tolerance and everything else, right? Why are these opinions not accepted, right?
Well, it's going to get even crazier. And, you know, when it gets to the point where somebody's telling you, you have to say 2 + 2 = 5. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's a great Twilight Zone episode. I forget the name of it, but it's the one where it's this dystopian future where they've intentionally made everyone ugly. And so there's a woman who's born or who's there, who's actually beautiful, and everyone else is ugly, and she's beautiful. And you know, they want to basically destroy her and deface her. And so the I kind of want to agree with Nietzsche that maybe aesthetics will be what saves the West.
right. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I remember that episode. Was that of the old like 50s, 60s one, or was it the 80s?
I can't remember the name of it. Yeah. Quite a long time ago, but
yeah, I think I remember that episode.
It's a great illustration of where the you know, the dystopian monoculture has to go. It has to go there. That's the thing. Like it can't stop. Like it can't stop at just fat acceptance. It has go to the next disgusting level of you know, grotesquerie.
Forced surgery, you know, at a young age to make every, you know, if you have too much beauty, we need to adjust that, you know, beauty, a justification department is going to, you know, send you a notice here and you need to go to that. Yeah. I mean, there's no end in sight really, because I think we're already on that slippery slope when we see some of the things happening now. And these things might seem, you know, outrageous at the moment, but frankly, I mean, society has already stepped up to that level. Now it's just a matter of, okay, what area are they going to implement the insanity next, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, you know, we think about like East Germany. We think of places where, think about Lysenkoism. That's a great example. The party tries to enforce a party line and dogma of science.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it ends up being a tremendous failure. All right, so let's apply that to say the corporate world. Well, when the corporate world enacts, you know, total affirmative action, it gets to the point where it's completely irrational, to where, you know, are you going to have to hire a lesbian Eskimo? Are you then going to have to hire, you know, a black lesbian Eskimo?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it reaches absurd proportions, and what happens is a kind of breakdown will occur, because you're going to have a bunch of dysfunctional people who aren't very good at what they do.
Yeah.
And when they're not very good at what they do, that entity, that company, is not going to function.
No,
very well.
No, exactly.
So that I hold out the hope for that all these fuck ups and losers are actually going to, you know, when you create this big army of fuck ups and losers and weirdos and
gangs
and fat asses, that they're actually going to, be their own worst enemy.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's something. Well, think about it again, though. I mean, that's to celebrate mediocrity. That, you know, that's to say, you know what? Don't bother to try to, you know, improve yourself or make yourself a better human being, or doing the things you can to, you know, whatever it is, right? And I think that's part of that aspect of trying to control human nature and even willpower. So it's going the lazy route, and that's what they're trying to appeal to right now, saying, you know what? Don't try to lose weight. You don't go that route. It's all the other people that have a problem with you, right?
Yeah, it's rooted in envy, and it makes everybody it's a total victim psychology, where you've voiced all of your neuroses and mental issues on everyone else.
Yep.
And it's just, I just don't see how I don't understand how it even functions as it is.
Like, exactly. I know.
I'm amazed that it functions as well as it does, but
wake up from nightmares sometimes and wonder where am I at now? What's happening? And it's always good to talk with people like yourself who can see these things happening, because sometimes it depends on where you're at. But I guess that's the importance of locality too, and actually, to a certain extent, surrounding yourselves with people who are just disconnected from this. They can observe it and look at it and see the absurdity with it, but. I mean, and I think in extension, that might be a salvation right there, that it might actually come down to that people who are on this page are like-minded, who are ready to take the torch of both Western civilization, but also other civilizations, wherever they're at, are actually ready to maintain some kind of balanced, way of life, so that when all this other shit just completely crumbles and, as you say, spirals out of control due to the incompetence and everything else, then that there will be something there in place, right? And actually can take and manage to withstand that. I think that's important, actually, to start thinking like that now, because this is going down quick.
Well, here's a great point. The acceptance of barrenness and things like homosexuality, or you know, if you're all screwed up and you believe a bunch of screwed up stuff, you're not going to produce, reproduce. You're not going to go, your line is not going to go into the future. So while I don't think that this system is good or ideal, one positive aspect that we can look at with, say, you know, all of these far left weirdos and organizations that basically want to create a culture of death where, you know, having children is evil or bad or whatever. One thing that that's going to do is make sure that those people don't go into the future.
Yeah.
So that aspect of it is good. I'm not saying it's good that it's that way, but I'm saying that you kind of bring on your own penalty, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You stop that way of thinking and living, you know, your descendants aren't going to be here 100 years from now.
It's kind of a natural eugenics as opposed to the dysgenics that we have today, you know?
Right. I mean, exactly. And again, I'm not making a moral statement about that. I'm just stating an objective fact.
Exactly. It's just how it is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I know they're trying, we don't have to get too deep into that discussion at the moment, but of course this, I think, is one of the reasons why they're trying, you know, to do so many things on the artificial level, from, you know, test tubes to, you know, cloning and transhumanism and all these kinds of things, of like perpetuating the fantasy into a space, into a sphere, which is, you know, completely just controlled by mechanics and human thought, you know?
Yeah, that's the goal, to have the global government that isn't subject to human error, because past empires fell due to human error. And so the thinking of the technocrat, of course, is that, well, we can have a robot god, robot state. The robot state won't make errors. Problem is, of course, that my computer messes up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think computers in the future are going to be perfected to where they won't still mess up. And if you have a complete retard populace, who's going to work on these computers, right? I mean, the fat acceptance mongoloid retard is not going to be able to, you know, repair the great central smart grid.
No, exactly. Well, you know, they're infallible because we are infallible. The computers are up to us to, you know, to program at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot those aspects of the transhumanist future and prospectus and their prognostications, I think are pipe dreams. I don't think they're ever going to achieve the perfection that they imagine.
Right. And I said infallible. I mean, fallible, of course, making those mistakes and being wrong. Right. Yeah. That's my English. I'm getting a little bit tired here. I know it's late for you too there, but Jay, and it's been great, you know, talking with you. Great discussion on these very important issues. And of course, tying this into a much, much bigger picture than just a pair of shootings. But, you know, that is the backdrop of everything that we've been talking about. And this is the reality of the situation we find ourselves in. And it's always great talking with you, Jay. It's been great having you here again. You know, please give us the details again about your, you know, website, if there's something else you'd like to plug to our audience or what have you, before we wrap things up for this time, Jay.
Yeah, thanks. Again, yeah, always a pleasure to talk to you too. It's jaysanalysis.com. It's film, philosophy, geopolitics, theology, religion, comparative religion. Kind of a smorgasbord of just stuff that I'm interested in. So, if you want to help me out, support me, I do weekly, bi-weekly philosophy lectures to try to pass on the classics of, classics of Western philosophical tradition. That's my background, is being trained as a philosopher. So if you want to get a cheap education in philosophy, which is not around much anymore, and if you go to the state school, you're going to get the, you know, the East German import who's going to bark a bunch of nonsense at you. I try to give something that's a more traditional reading. So if you want to help me out, you can subscribe to Jay's Analysis and learn a little bit of philosophy that will hopefully help you, you know, critically think and deconstruct these big, deep terror events.
All right, very good. JaceAnalysis.com. Check out RedIceCreations.com. Of course, the links from there as well. Great. Thank you so much, Jay. We'll talk again.
All right. Thank you, Henry.
And we say thank you for listening, guys and gals, and for caring about these important topics that we highlight on this program. If you want more and at the same time help us out, you can subscribe at RedIceMembers.com to get access to our archives. We have over 900 programs on a wide variety of topics. You can also follow us on Twitter and Google+, like us on Facebook, and write a good review about us if you can as well. The first hour of our program is always for free, sometimes the whole thing. We also produce videos, and you can follow our busy news section too. The website is redicecreations.com. We are also on Stitcher. We used to be on iTunes, but we got censored from there recently due to the politically incorrect topics that we decide to highlight. You can also find us on YouTube, by the way. But yeah, we'll be back in just a few days with much more. We have a lot of good guests lined up for you as well. Have a great rest of your day, wherever you're at, and we'll speak to you more soon. Take care.